Hey, welcome. This is Coach Rory, and I'm sitting down with Coach Dylan. I'd like to welcome you to an episode of what we would like to call Up Tempo Talks. This is going to be our weekly podcast episode where we have up tempo talks about various topics in the running world. Today, we're going to branch off from last week's episode in which we talked about Coach Dylan's journey to get to the Olympic trials. If you were by TV or streaming online last weekend, probably by the time you're listening to it, it might be 2 weekends ago. Man, the 2020 Olympic trials was quite the race. A lot of surprises, very dramatic finishes. And I can say as a spectator, it was probably one of the most fun times I've had watching a race. So we're going to get some insight from Dylan today, not only on his race, but what does an event like this entail? Sure, you may have watched it on TV or online, but there's a lot of things behind the scenes you might not be aware of that made it just a phenomenal day. So let's start there. How'd you feel heading into this day? What was the treatment like? I mean, we're seeing these athletes at the start line. A lot of them are sponsored. Now, there are some runners who have never been to a race of this caliber. Do they treat you all the same? Are you getting treated like a rock star out there? How did it feel being on that stage?
Yeah, it was super cool. So the Atlanta Track Club put on the Olympic trials this year, and it was absolutely, I mean, they did an incredible job. They really they owned it as a club. They really wanted to make this a real true experience. And I think they did everything possible to make that very seamless for us as athletes. What they did is they took the ideas potentially and maybe some things that went wrong in the previous Olympic trials, and they took that and said, we're going to make it better. You know, Atlanta Track Club is actually the second largest track club in the nation. So they've got a huge base, a lot of pull in the city, and a lot of resources. So they told us that anybody who qualifies for the trials, whether you are an A standard or a B standard, you know, if you were the fastest person or the slowest person, that you're going to get your way paid and that you're not going to have to worry about anything before you get there and once you get there, and logistically everything was going to be smooth. And that's exactly how it was. I mean, so they paid for our flights. They paid for and booked 3 days of hotel and travel, getting to and from places. They gave us a full itinerary of everything that we needed to do, provided tons of food options, lunch, dinner, snacks. You know, it was incredible. I think the dinner, I didn't personally go to the dinner, but the dinner was actually at the aquarium. And we're supposed to sit down in front of the whale tank. So it was a really cool experience for those who got to attend that. And but yeah, so I mean, everything was made so that the athlete didn't have to worry. I think Atlanta Track Club noticed, you know, they really paid attention to the athlete and what it took for someone to get here to that sort of stage. And to be, you know, to come to something like the Olympic trials is something that very few people get to do in their lifetime. And they made sure that everybody could do it without issue. You know, I had to make very minimal decisions when I was there, which is incredible. So, I mean, I think for those of us who have run big city races, I know Rory, you run Boston. You know, a race like that, there's so many things going on. You have to obviously plan travel way ahead of time, plan for your hotel. You know, that doesn't even count for going to the expo and all the extra things that go into it just to kind of get to race day. We didn't have to worry about all that. Everything was done in the same hotel. All of our information and stuff that we needed for travel and everything was done seamlessly. It was right then and there. So super easy for us as athletes, you know, before the race. And we had, again, hardly had to make any decisions outside of, you know, leaving my hotel room and going downstairs and attending a meeting or, you know, talking with the people I needed to talk to. So really cool experience. And I think Atlanta Track Club set the bar for us as athletes, or for those who want to host the Olympic trials. I think they're going to look back and say, you know, Atlanta did this well. You know, we have to be able to provide the same service, or at least, you know, at least use Atlanta as a resource for making that successful in years to come.
Dang, they really rolled out the red carpet for you there. I know personally, I do not think I would have passed up dinner in front of a whale tank, but I know you had a lot of other stuff going on, so that's fine. Another thing I observed about the athletes, they seem to be carrying around a lot of goodies from various companies. Martin, I think, gave you a ton of gels and a good supply that you could use for the race or future runs. Of course, a lot of buzz was created by Nike providing the Alpha Flies, that new iteration of the racing flat. And man, were there any other kind of little perks like that that you got? I know I also heard about athletes getting foam rollers. Is that something they're just handing to you? Do you have to sign up for that?
Yeah, gosh, I mean, it was crazy. So I think around 2 or 3 months ago, I caught word that from a Nike representative that everybody at the trials were going to be receiving the brand new Nike Alpha Fly, that nobody had really seen them. You know, the specs of them, nothing. We didn't really know anything other than the fact that Eliud Kipchoge wore them in his sub-2 attempt. And I think the night before I got there, when the first people were arriving and they entered the Nike room, and it was true. So every single person who wanted to have a pair of the brand new unreleased Nike Alpha Fly shoes had the opportunity to do so. Didn't matter who they ran for or anything. Anybody was able to walk into that room, take anything they wanted. And so I actually walked in with a few other people, and it's just boxes, you know, from the ground to the ceiling and all the way across the room, every size, everything you needed. And it was funny, the person who was actually fitting me for my shoes was Shalane Flanagan. So it was an interesting experience, being that, you know, she's not a shoe salesman. You know, that's definitely not where she wanted to be, but it was cool for her to be there and, you know, to represent Nike and everything. So yeah, that was the big one, having the Nike shoes. I mean, those shoes are unreleased. I'm assuming they'll probably be released sometime in the next, you know, few months. And the price tag on those will probably be somewhere between $285 and $300. And those of us who had them at the trials, there were people who were selling them for upwards of $2,000. And let me tell you, those shoes are absolutely incredible. I've never worn a shoe like that before. Very interesting. There's a lot of hot takes on this all across the running world at the moment, but definitely a shoe to get your hands on to kind of get a feel for something that you've never experienced before. But other than that, yeah. So there was some free Morton, some, you know, gels, that sort of thing. There was definitely other vendors there who were giving out free stuff. We did get a foam roller from Roll Recovery, which was really cool. So all the trials members got foam rollers from them. I actually used it this afternoon. So very cool, very generous of other companies to come and support the runners, and then for us to be able to support them as well on the big stage.
Unreal. Yeah, we could save a separate podcast for those shoes alone. You mentioned Shalane Flanagan fitting you with the shoes. That's got to be so cool. I know as a big running fan, you know, you just felt starstruck out there because you're seeing all the biggest names in the sport, sometimes a few feet away from you. And I'm sure from your perspective, you got to be pretty up close and personal with these athletes. So maybe you could talk about that. Are the top athletes we're seeing on TV, are they at the same hotel? Do you see them walking around? Are they keeping to themselves? And then also, I thought since the start was so crowded, when you're on the line, are you kind of looking around and saying, oh, I'm with so-and-so? Do you get to have conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as I know, everybody was in the same hotel. All the athletes, there were 700 of us. And so 700 of us in this pretty big hotel downtown Atlanta, right across from the starting line. I mean, literally it takes a minute to get there. It's called the Omni Hotel, very large. So yeah, 700 plus athletes in the field. We're all sitting in the same hotel. And to be honest, I think everybody was just kind of doing their own thing. I don't really remember. I think everybody was there for a reason, right? You know, you're there to make the Olympic trials or to, you know, to show up and run your day. And I think, you know, it's cool to see, you know, the big names and, you know, those people that, you know, were very successful in the sport. But when it comes down to it, it's important, at least for myself, is that to not see those people as any better, as a person, right? I mean, they're people. They you know, they live and breathe. You know, they go to sleep at night. They do the same thing every night that I do, right? You know, some just are a bit more experienced, maybe more talented, maybe more successful at a grand level. But I think, you know, as a whole, I like to treat people, especially in our sport, who are at a very high level, relatively equal. You know, I don't like to see myself as inferior or see them as superior, but really just seeing them as people who share the same goal, you know, and then that's making the team. So, but yeah, I mean, it was cool to see everybody. You know, I think I was briefly on TV a little bit before the race. I didn't realize it, but it turned out that Deslin was behind me. So, you know, here I am thinking I'm getting some TV time. But, you know, it was really to spot Des. So it was very cool. But yeah, on the start line, it was, you know, again, yeah, you're kind of looking around. I think what I was doing is I was looking the backs of people's bibs because that's their like seed number. So like my seed number was 96 or something like that. 92, maybe, I can't remember. But, you know, you kind of get an idea of the people around you and kind of what their best times were and kind of where, you know, you are among them. And so, you know, I'm seated 90 something, but I wanted to be around like the 50, you know, 35 to 50 is kind of what I really wanted to be. And yeah, so, I mean, just kind of standing around in these big crowds of people and just waiting for the gun to go off. I mean, we're sitting in the crowd for, it wasn't very long, maybe 10 minutes, but, you know, the nervous energy gets going and you're kind of, you know, you're less focused on other people, but just kind of thinking, you know, heart's starting to beat, you know, you hear the Star Spangled Banner playing and everything, you know, you really want to, you're just ready to go. You're ready to hear that gun go off. And so a lot of nervous energy and tension, but definitely less focused on other people, but just more so focused on like, all right, let's get going. Let's get going.
Great point. I like that you have the mentality that these athletes aren't necessarily any better than you. As we saw, I mean, you mentioned you were ranked about in the 90s going in. And we'll get to your race. You finished 46 overall, which is huge improvement. We have a good friend in town here who was ranked around 70th, and she ended up finishing 28th and beating some runners she looked up to. So, yeah, everyone, all these runners are also human. They have good and bad days like all of us. So thanks for sharing that. Now, I think it's a good transition. You're talking about being on the start line. Let's get more into the race and the course itself. Now, I have the perspective of the spectator. Now, I got to say, as a course, I love the way the course is organized. Just to comment briefly, it was 2 8-mile loops, I want to say, and then one bigger 10.2-mile loop. A lot of it was just going up and down one street. I think it was like Peachtree Street, if I recall. So it was so easy. You could just pick a spot along the street. You'd see the guys come by first because they started first. Then you'd see the females closely behind. Then you could backtrack on that same street, go a little bit further down, and they turn around and you could see them from both sides. So I thought it was incredible. Of course, you'd still have to hustle to catch certain runners at certain points, but man, you were seeing action, and especially with so many runners, especially with so many female runners, it felt like there was a runner going by at any given moment of the race. So as an athlete, did you find that kind of course repetitive, or are you just so in the moment and enjoying it and hearing the crowds that you didn't really get bored or think about that?
So this is something that's really interesting in that, you know, a lot of data nerds, data freaks would, you know, would shun me for. I didn't care about the course. I could care less about the hills, where they were, exactly where they were. People tend to obsess over, you know, the course and, you know, specific points along the course. Oh, there's this hill here, and here, hill there. And it's really easy to kind of, you know, put yourself, just to get ahead of yourself, essentially, and just overemphasize it. And, you know, if you know me, that's one thing I don't do. I don't overemphasize things that are very trivial, don't really matter that much. So I'm showing up at a race like this and I'm there to race. I could care less about how fast I'm going, you know, relatively, right? I mean, I'm not going out. I wasn't necessarily going out there to PR. I wasn't necessarily going out there to go run the fastest race. I was going out there to compete. And so, you know, on a course like Atlanta, which, you know, if you do go and look at the course, it's hilly, right? I mean, there's like 1400 feet of elevation gain, but if you ask me how that felt, I'll tell you easy. you know, I didn't even think about it really until the final 2 miles. Really, the last 2 miles were kind of tough, you know, and that's just because the headwind was just positioned in a bad spot. But the way that the course was run, so there's 3 loops. So there's an 8, an 8, and a 10. And just the entire course is just lined with people. I've never been in a race. Like, again, I've never ran a road major, so I couldn't tell you what it was like to really have that thick of crowd just being there all the time. I couldn't hardly hear myself breathe. And it was incredible. I mean, there were so many people out on the course. You know, as far as I knew my mom was there. You know, so I was like, okay, well, my mom's going to be saying my name, but I was hearing my name all over the course. There were several people from Runners Connect who were there who sent me pictures of me racing, who were cheering me on all across the way. So it was really cool. But I actually liked the loop version of the course. I think that was a neat way to break it down. Because you know you're coming by the same spots, you kind of get used to it a bit more. You know, like where it's a big uphill or there's a big downhill, you know, where to kind of save some energy, not save some energy, you know. But with the race that we had, I mean, I was just in such a big pack of people, you know. I was running with 50 guys who were just clicking off. And so I was just settled in behind these guys. And, you know, there's a lot of, again, it was windy, but to be honest, I didn't feel it until 23, 24 miles. It was a non-factor. And I didn't feel the hills really at all, just with the crowds of people and with the level of athletes around me. You know, you're so excited, you're so in it that, you know, you don't really feel the slide ups, the slide downs. It's just pure focus in the race itself. But I mean, it was great. I mean, again, they said there's somewhere around 500,000 people out on the course. So, you know, for spectators and for getting, you know, for really getting that Olympic atmosphere, Atlanta did an incredible job.
I was having a field day. I was doing some videography and filming out there for my personal YouTube channel, Trail Gangstas. So I'll make a shameless plug there. But also you're going to see some of that footage incorporated into some upcoming Runners Connect videos, just because it's cool. There's big names in there, and I think it'll tie in well with the topics. But yeah, you mentioned the crowds. I also didn't feel like it was super congested or crowded. People were so spread out along the street. Really, you could be walking by any part of the course, and there would be a gap for you to get in. You could get right along the course. It wasn't like there was 4 rows deep of people, unless you were at, say, the start or the finish. That's where it did get a little congested. So you kind of were walking us through part of the race. Let's get to the last few miles here, because that's when you said it got interesting, it got tough, there's a headwind. So just talk about those final couple of miles. What are you thinking about? Did you know you're in the 40s? I mean, your goal was to get around 50th place or better. So how are you bringing yourself to the line? And when you finished, what did you feel? I mean, did you get to see your family right away? Or are you just joyous, celebrating? Let's talk about the end of the race.
Yeah, I'll take a couple steps back first. So my good friend, Craig Hunt, who was also in the race, we talked about strategy going in. And we thought that if we ran 2:17 on that course, it would be a very successful day for us. And we would place very high. And so we thought, okay, well, let's try to go out in 108.30 and see what happens from there. Well, as things go, we kind of just got sucked into the pack of people, and we went out in 107.50. So 2:15:40 pace. And that was fine. We felt good, felt easy. You know, it didn't feel like anything too bad, but I really just wanted to make sure that I wasn't exhausting too much energy on the downhills. So, you know, given there's a lot of ups, but there's a lot of downs. And so if you've ever run like a downhill race or a course that has a lot of downhills, that's kind of more towards the front of the race, it can really just, you know, blow your quads out. And so my big thing was to not bomb those downhills, to run efficiently, to stay in control and not just let everything go, because I really wanted to make sure that I had some energy left in the final 6 miles. So anyways, we started off a bit more conservatively. Things felt so easy, just really rhythmic. You know, we were even talking a little bit, you know, because you can see everybody coming up the other way too. So we could see the leaders on both the men's and women's side. And we were just chatting like, oh, do you see who's up there? Like, oh, she's having a good day, or he's having a good day. It was kind of cool. It was neat. So a lot of focus, but a lot of fluidity, relaxed nature as well. But yeah, so again, I played it very cautiously. I wanted to make sure that I didn't waste too much energy on those downhills. And so you come around the first eight loop, you do the same loop again, and then after that, you do the half of that loop or three quarters of that loop, and then you add, there's a new portion of that loop that is not included in the first two loops. So it's a short kind of out and back loop that's 2 or 3 miles, and that's right before the finish. And so at that point, I hit 23 miles, and I was still running really well. I was moving up. Things had spread out, so I was running by myself at this point, you know, just kind of trying to chase people, doing my best as possible to kind of move up as much as I could. I didn't know what place I was in, but judging from earlier in the race, I knew I was like somewhere close to 100, so I was pretty far back early on, but I just knew that people were going to blow up, people were going to drop out, I was going to move up because I was doing good. So around 23 miles, you know, you really starts to string out and you get a bit more internal, a bit more cerebral there. You have to rely on yourself a bit more. You know, early in the race, I'm running behind people. I'm just kind of clicking off the pace, but then it transitions a bit to more like, okay, get to the line. You get there as strong as you can, you know, trying to fight off those negative thoughts. I mean, my last 3 or 4 miles in my head, I'm fighting against myself to be like, all right, just keep pushing. And aerobically in a marathon, you feel fine. You know, you don't really get to that, you know, that really hard strain that you would in like a, you know, a shorter event. But, you know, on a course like that where it beats your legs up and it's just trying to get your brain to communicate your body to just keep pushing, stay light, you know, moving, getting your legs moving. And, you know, you get a little bit complacent at sometimes and you just got to keep pushing through it. And I just kept telling myself to stay strong, stay with it. And I tried to do that as best as possible. But in that little last loop, again, you're running all uphill and into the wind. And most people were losing minutes off their time. I went from running 5:10s a mile to running 5:45, 5:50, and still catching people. So that'll tell you something, is that if those who were strong in that final 2 or 3 miles, they had the great races. You know, that's the Jake Rileys, right? Or the Opti, the guys who made the team. Those are the people who made the team who had the legs left, because if you look at how the race played out, the leaders of the race from the beginning weren't the people who won the race. You know, they ran patiently, they ran strong, and they had those gears in those final miles. So, you know, really, it felt like we were running in mud. I actually saw Rory running next to me on the next of the course, and he was running faster than I was. So it was, you know, and he was running with equipment. So I knew I was not moving very fast at that point. But yeah, so it really, at that point, you know, you got 2 miles to go. It's like, right, just stay with it. And yeah, I mean, with like a mile to go, you kind of start getting that feeling of just like knowing what it is to finish. And then, you know, your brain starts to kind of like, all right, give it a little bit more. And actually in the final stretch of things, the guy I was running with most of the race, Craig, we actually finished right next to each other. He passed me right at the last second and got me. So, I mean, it was great. It was a cool experience. And, you know, I was all smiles at that point, because I knew that we had both run a really smart race and we're coached and we do the same training day in, day out, essentially. So it was really cool that we finished, you know, tenths of a second next to each other. So it was awesome. It was a great feeling. It was very rewarding. You know, I was just all smiles at that point. Just, you know, I hugged Craig after the race. My mom was just right around the corner. I felt good. You know, I wasn't very, I was very satisfied with how everything played out. And yeah, I mean, it was a really rewarding feeling to just be able to survive a day like that. You know, a lot of people get there and they're just not able to finish, or, you know, they have bad days, but it was really cool to be able to show up when it mattered.
Well, I loved hearing that. You definitely performed well and you should be happy with that. And I think that's something you'll remember for the rest of your life. I like how you referenced, you know, so many people being happy and the fact there are smiles out there. Now, as a spectator, the last thing I'll say as we conclude was, what was different about this race from like a championship race where I've been at Boston? You know, a lot of those top people are still trying to finish and position well, but it looked like, besides the moments where runners were doing battle with the wind, runners were genuinely enjoying themselves. Like, they were smiling, interacting with the crowd. Some of them knew that they just had no chance of making the team. Mm-hmm. So I think that gave them a chance to just be a little bit more in the moment of, in this race. And especially with the wind being out there, no one was, from what I could tell, looking at times anymore. And it made that fun. I had friends in the race who were talking back to me, and I would just never see that. So we're so happy for you and glad you could represent Runners Connect. Congrats again. And thanks for tuning in to another episode, I guess our first official episode of Up Tempo Talks.